An excellent day for an exorcism.
I understand, all right. You're one of the undead, and I'm a werewolf.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Hey, Patsy! No running in the hallway.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Horror Crypt Podcast, episode number 82, and a movie that is going to take us all the way back to Elm Street. But however, this time we are going to go back to 1987, and we're going to go and see Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, Dream Warriors. Now this one, by far, as far as I'm concerned, is probably the most inventive sort of one in the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. They've always said that this is the very best one out of all of the nightmares. And, you know, from watching them all from beginning to end, every Nightmare on Elm Street movie that's ever come out, I'm actually in agreement with them. I mean, I do like the next one that we're going to be doing, which is number 4, Dream Master. But I think the inventiveness of this movie is really, really quite good as far as just pushing the story forward. But you also start to see a little bit of little quirks of Freddy, the little catchphrases and stuff like that. And he's sort of like, he becomes less of a, you know, a darkened boogeyman to really, he's starting to come out into the real world. And it's really, I mean, when I say into the real world, it's not one of those that we first saw in Nightmare on Elm Street, which was the dark, scary, you know, behind closed doors sort of thing. He's sort of like coming to the forefront now, but he's really starting to bring his authority and his personality, which is really, really quite good. So I'm actually really excited to do this one. This one's been on my list for quite some time, and I am going to get through every single Nightmare on Elm Street, so definitely strap in for that one, that's for sure. But look, before I get started, I just want to let everyone know I've got a couple of brand new pages that have actually just started, and I want everyone to maybe log on and just see, and, you know, maybe even come and say hi to me. So as far as Facebook goes, I've got, obviously, the Facebook page, The Horror Crypt, but it's now called Horror Crypt Podcast. So you can certainly log on there and, you know, you definitely follow me, and we can actually get in conversations with regards to what you'd like me to do, if you like, you know, certain horror movies, if you don't like certain horror movies. And also, if there's any suggestions that you might have that you might be interested in me doing that I might not have seen before, and I'd love to get more, you know, horror movies under my belt, and maybe even find out other movies that I've really never, you know, experienced. So that would be a really great one to get as well. I remember I'm also on Instagram at Horror Crypt Podcast. So if you just look for me, it's horror_crypt_podcast. You'll find me there. I've only just redone that one because that one's a brand new one that I've actually restarted again. And just to make sure that I've got every social media covered, I am on Twitter as well. So Twitter is definitely one that I've actually restarted again, and that one is Horror Crypt Podcast. And that's all you got to look for, Horror Crypt Podcast. You'll see me there. You can hit the follow button and you can be one of my followers and we can interact there as well. And right there, you can give me suggestions as well as to what you'd like me to do. You know, if there are movies you'd like me to see or review. And if you're actually enjoying the podcast, because I know there are so many people that are downloading this podcast as we speak. And I know there are a lot of people that are actually really enjoying every week listening to what I'm talking about. So please get in contact with me, interact with me. It would be great to get some feedback. And also remember, just to cap it all off, horrorcryptpodcast2022@gmail.com. That's my direct line. If you want to send me any information or any comments or questions that you might have, I'm very happy to read them and definitely respond back to you. So that being, getting all that sort of like housework out of the way and all the housekeeping out of the way, I think we need to get into the podcast, which is Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, Dream Warriors. But before we do, we love to listen to the trailer. I've got two trailers today. The first one, you don't actually get to hear what the movie is titled, but the second one you will. So sit back and relax, because here comes the trailers of A Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warriors.
Razors on his right hand. man of my dreams. He's real, isn't he? He's real. Let go of him, you bastard.
So this movie obviously stars Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger. We also get to see the reprisal of Nancy Thompson by Heather Langenkamp. We also get to have the reprisal role of Officer Thompson by John Saxon. And we get to see a very young Lawrence Fishburne, who's actually credited as just one of the orderlies at the psychiatric hospital. And we also get to see the very first glimpse of Patricia Arquette, and she's playing Kirsten Parker. Absolutely great amount of people and cast in this movie. So without further ado, let's get into this movie. So the movie runs for 1 hour and 36 minutes. It actually was the estimated budget of $4.5 million. However, in the opening weekend in the US and Canada on March 1st, 1987, it grossed $8,880,555. I love how they're so precise, $555. Gross worldwide, this is enormous. So remember, $4.5 million, they estimated the budget. Gross worldwide, $44,793,222. Once again, I love the $222. It's so precise of what it is, but that is a staggering amount of money. But as I said, this movie, we were absolutely hungry after part two, which was, as I've said, the gayest horror movie ever to be made, and they have referenced that, and they are acknowledging the fact that Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge, was the gayest horror movie ever. But we were absolutely bloodthirsty for another horror movie, as in another Nightmare on Elm Street, and when they made this one, it really reinvigorated our hunger and our desire for another Nightmare on Elm Street movie. So the movie opens up where we're watching a young girl creating a papier-mâché model of Nancy's old house, 1428 Elm Street. Now, we've got no idea who this young girl is, but she's just, you know, sitting there, and we see that it's about 1:30 in the morning, and she's struggling to stay awake, and, you know, she's got the old spoonful of the Maxwell House coffee and puts it into her mouth and then downs a Coke with it. So I was like, oh my God, she's really trying to keep awake. She's also got the radio absolutely blasting, and you know, so she's really struggling to keep awake. But we don't know why it is that she's making this house. Now, the house was originally inhabited by obviously Nancy and Jesse from the preceding Nightmare on Elm Street movies, but you know, for some reason this house has been haunting Kristen's dreams. So as we're seeing that, you know, she's really trying to stay awake, Kristen's mother bursts in, annoyed that her daughter is still awake, and reveals that Kristen has been seeing a therapist for her nightmares, and she's been saying, listen, Mum, you know, I'm having really bad dreams. And of course, then you suddenly hear from downstairs, you know, where's the bourbon? And it's like, oh, and she's like, oh, listen, you know, honey, I've got a guest. And she's like, oh, and you don't want to keep him waiting, do you? And she's like, no, I don't want to keep him waiting. So basically, the mother is just basically very dismissive of Kristen. Really doesn't give a shit. You know, she's too busy socializing downstairs with this guy that she's been out with and she might have picked up, or she might have just gone out to dinner with him and then thinks, hey, we're going to get into some, you know, fun parts at the end of the evening. So she basically says to Kristen, get into bed. You know what your shrink said. You know, so she basically tucks Kristen in and goes downstairs, leaving Kristen to fall asleep. And I love the fact that, as we've seen in these movies, you know, from falling asleep to being in the dream, it's so quickly, but it's also, it just morphs so beautifully into the next scene. So the next scene we see, Kristen's laying in bed, and we can suddenly see there's some, you know, her hair's moving. So it's like wind's blowing, and then of course we get a little leaf that happens to fall under her bed, and she sort of like stirs, wakes up, and looks over the top of her bed set, and we see that she is asleep, but she's actually woken up in front of, you guessed it, 1428 Elm Street. And we see there's some children out there jumping rope and, you know, playing in the front yard, throwing the ball. And so Kristen starts to walk, obviously, towards the house to find out what's going on.
Hi, what's your name?
Kristen, what's yours? What is this place?
I gotta go now.
Wait, little girl, don't go in there! Little girl!
This is where he takes us.
Come on, we're going.
So of course, at this stage, Kristen grabs the little girl and rushes towards the door, becoming trapped as the floor starts to melt. And of course, Freddy is right behind her, and you know he's getting closer and closer. And it's almost like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience where, you know, in a dream, you might be running, but you know you can't run as if you'd be running in real life. Everything is slowed down, and it's very, very hard to run in your dream. Well, Kristen's having this exact same situation now. She seems to be running on the spot, and the floor, when it says, you know, the floor melts, I think it's basically because the floor is just a mound of blood. You know, I'm thinking that's what it is. I mean, it looks like blood anyway, but you see, you know, Freddy comes, you know, running around the corner and sees, you know, there's Kristen trying to, you know, run away from him, running on the spot, and he's getting closer and closer and closer. And just as he's about to swipe her with his blades, she manages to start running, you know, full steam. And of course, as she's running around, she goes around a corner and runs into this room where suddenly you see a whole lot of dead bodies. And it's, you know, teenagers and children that have hung themselves. And it's just an entire room full of kids. And of course, it's at this stage, you hear the little girl say, you know, put me down, you're hurting me. And as Kristen looks down to see what she's clutching, she's actually holding a dead and rotting body. Kristen screams, and suddenly she wakes up in her bed. So after that nightmare, you'd suddenly go, oh my God, I've got to go to the bathroom and get a drink. So she goes into the bathroom, and of course she goes to turn on the tap, but it turns into a hand, and grabbing her hand and holding it in place before the image of Freddy Krueger basically is now in front of her in the mirror. And of course, on the other side of the taps, you suddenly see the razors come out of the taps, and it's his razored hand, and of course it swipes against her, and then you just basically see a squirt of blood, and you know, she's screaming. It's at this stage that Mum's come running into the bedroom. Now obviously we've realized that maybe Mum didn't spend the night with this guy, because she's in a nightdress and everything, but she basically runs into the bathroom and opens up the door to find that Kristen is holding a razor blade. And basically we realize that maybe she's tried to commit suicide, because there's blood oozing from her wrists, and of course she passes out. Of course, the next scene, we are now transitioning over to a psychiatric hospital, and Max, the orderly, which is Lawrence Fishburne, and Dr. Gordon basically discuss the rash of teenage suicides that have swept over the area. And of course, you know, Lawrence Fishburne, he's a really great character. He's not in it for a huge amount of time, but what he brings to the movie is really quite good, because he's walking along and he's got the Remember the old transistor radios that you used to have? Everyone that's my age or above? Those of us who are, you know, lower in the age group of the Horror Crypt podcast, you might not realize about little transistor radios. You used to be able to have them to listen to the news. You know, there was no such thing as, you know, headphones and stuff like that. So anyway, he's listening and he's basically hearing that there's a rash of suicides. And he says to Dr. Gordon, you know, I've got a theory about all these suicides. And of course, Dr. Gordon's like, well, don't hold back on us, Max. You know, we need all the help we can get. And he goes, you know what? It's the fucked up chromosomes. It's everything that happened in the 60s where the you know, parents were all dropping acid. And he goes, oh, okay. He said, well, I thought it was like sex, drugs and rock and roll. And he goes, oh, shit, that's what keeps people alive. It's like, okay. So as we're going down, they meet Taryn, a girl not sleeping, and Jennifer, a girl who's self-harming, putting cigarettes out on her arms. Now, we don't realize why she's putting cigarettes out on her arms. And she actually says to Dr. Gordon, you know, my burns are healing. So, you know, can I get my cigarette privileges back? And of course, he's like, you know, you don't hold your breath. It's not a really great possibility right there. And then, of course, we see a doctor by the name of Dr. Sims, and she is a dragon lady. I mean, she's trying to present the whole thing of like, oh, everyone, you know, is nice to me and, you know, I'm such a nice doctor. No, she's not. She's a piece of shit. And I so wanted her to die through this movie. I really did. She's just got no interest in the children whatsoever. Dr. Gordon is the one that really comes to the forefront of the love and affection that he's got with all the kids, you know, and he really shows his compassion to all the children. And so we hear that there's going to be a new staff member who's just left grad school. They've been making a lot of progress in pattern nightmares. And Dr. Gordon's like, really, we don't need an undergraduate coming in, messing everything up, and just because there's this rock star, superstar that does, you know, nightmares. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I know the children, I can do this, and, you know, there's really no reason for her to come in and try to be this superstar and undermine me. Of course, it's at that moment that an emergency message asks for both doctors to go to the examination rooms. Screaming can be heard in the room. And of course, Elaine Parker, which is Kristen's mother, she is not interested in what's going on. She's just basically, you know, talking to another nurse outside, and she's leaning up against the you know, the wall. And she's like, you know, this, she just is throwing a temper tantrum because she just wants to have attention. And one of the nurses does say to Dr. Gordon and also to the other doctor, Dr. Sims, that there's this young girl, Kristen Parker. She's pulled out her stitches. You know, she was okay until we tried to sedate her. So, you know, she's pulled her stitches out. She won't let us approach her. And she's just, you know, she will not let us get anywhere near her with a needle to try and calm her down. So we've got Dr. Gordon's now in the room and he's trying to calm Kristen down, and we've got Max in there trying to calm her down, and we've got another orderly. And so, you know, Kristen happens to grab a hold of a scalpel, and as Max goes towards her, she swings it and cuts him on the arm. So then she starts basically reliving what's going on in her nightmares, and she starts singing the nursery rhyme, 1, 2, Freddy's coming to for you, 3, 4, better lock your door, 5, 6, grab your crucifix, 7, 8, better stay up late, 9, 10, and she can't figure out the last bit. She's got no idea. She knows what it is, she just can't remember it. And it's at that moment that Nancy is standing in the doorway and walks in and calmly takes the scalpel from Kristen and says, 9, 10, never sleep again. And it's at that moment that Kristen then hugs Nancy because, oh my God, there's someone that actually knows what I'm going through. Because the other people are like, what the hell is she talking about? But Nancy comes in basically to save the day and really starts to engage with Kristen and calms everything down. And you can see the room basically return to normal. It's like, oh, thank God, you know, someone's come through. So Nancy asks Dr. Gordon about the kids who all suffer from sleep disorders, including insomnia, narcolepsy, and bedwetting, but all have nightmares in common. And he basically says that, you know, they've got a shared delusion of a boogeyman which scares them so much they would do anything to not sleep. And he also elaborates with a story of a young boy, and it's like, oh my God, this is very, very hardcore when you hear the story that he says. He basically says, I don't know where he got the razor blade, but he cut off his own eyelids to stop him from going to sleep. And it's like, Jesus Christ, like, I mean, that is hardcore. Really, you've really got some problems as far as trying to stay awake. but to cut off your own eyelids because you were so terrified to sleep, that was the only way you were going to stay awake. But as we know in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, that, you know, after a certain amount of times, you have these things called micro naps, which is you're dreaming, but you're not actually asleep, but your brain basically shuts down to try and reboot itself and has these micro naps. So we all, obviously we understand that this young guy that cuts off his eyelids, he'll still have sleep, like he'll still have micro naps before he basically becomes a complete and blithering idiot and becomes psychotic, and obviously he'll pass away. So he does, you know, Dr. Gordon does say that they did lose him to Dearborn. I'm guessing it might have been another hospital or a cemetery or whatever, I don't know, but they don't elaborate on that part of the story. So after the conversation with Dr. Gordon, you know, Nancy basically says, well, you know, I need to go somewhere. So as she goes to leave, she picks up her handbag, and unfortunately some of the stuff drops out, and we find that Nancy is taking medication, and the medication is Hypnosil. And Dr. Gordon just basically gives it to her and, you know, just doesn't think very much of it, and recommends that he goes to speak to, you know, that she goes to speak to Max, and, you know, that way that she can get to know what's going on with the children and meet the children. Of course, as, you know, she turns to leave, Dr. Gordon notices a nun dressed in all white who seems to be there and then suddenly disappear. So we're really not going to have any context of what's going on in that regard. So the next scene, we see Max showing Nancy to an office that she can use and introduces her to some of the patients. And the first patient that he speaks to, that she speaks to, is Philip, nicknamed the Walker because he sleepwalks, and who makes puppets. Now, he makes puppets out of clay and things like that, and he's like, yeah, they should really be made out of wood, but they won't give me a knife because, you know, I might, you know, cut my wrist. So it's like, okay. But he also, she's also introduced to a guy by the name of Kincaid, and as Max says, now take a good look at Kincaid because you might not see him very often because he gets himself thrown into the quiet room so many times during the week, you know, and the quiet room is basically like solitary confinement. And of course his idea is like, yeah, well, I don't want to see your, you know, your ass all the time. And he's like, yeah, I love you too. And so she basically just keeps going, you know, looking at the, you know, basically getting to know everybody. But of course, we see, in, as this is all going on, a very attractive young nurse coming out of one of the rooms. And she's got a whole lot of towels, and one of the towels falls over. So this young guy by the name of Joey leaves his room and goes and picks up the towel for the young nurse. And she, you know, thanks him, and he's, you can just see he's got that little bit of a, I like her. But he's also got a teardrop. Now, I don't know whether it's I mean, it is obviously in pen or texter or something, because the teardrop appears then disappears. So I don't know whether someone got you know, into the director's ear and said, you realize that a teardrop is to do with the fact that he's been in prison. Because I think a teardrop is like to do with the fact that you've murdered somebody. I don't know. I haven't murdered anyone. I've not been in prison, so I don't know. But I kind of think that that's the way it's supposed to be, you know, that they've actually done that. So someone got into the director and said, yep, no, we need to remove that. As much as it looks funny, you know, like looks meaningful or whatever, let's get rid of it altogether. So, as I said, at one stage it's there. Next time, it's gone. So we just go. So now we basically have this situation that Nancy has to go and get some stuff from Kristen's bedroom. So she goes over to, you know, Kristen's house, and Elaine basically sits there and you know, she's really interested in what Nancy's got to say. And Nancy says, you know, have the nightmares got any better or any worse? And she's like, well, they've gotten worse. And she's like, oh, can you tell me about it? And she said, well, they've gotten worse because I took away her credit cards, and has sort of like a bit of a joke with her. And Nancy's like, I'm serious, you know, this is ridiculous. There are other kids other than your daughter, good kids, smart kids, that are affected by this situation, and I don't think it's a laughing matter to go through this. And she's like, yeah, whatever, look, you know, I've got an appointment I've got to get to. And she's like, well, I've just come to get some of Kirsten's things. And she's like, yeah, I've got a bag packed, it's upstairs on her bed. So there's, you know, Elaine's calling out to her housekeeper, Teresa, and of course Teresa is not answering, so God knows where she is. And of course, you know, Nancy's like, listen, it's okay, I can go upstairs, I can get her stuff, just which door is it? And she's like, oh, it's the door on the right or the left or whatever. So she goes upstairs and she opens up the bedroom door, and she, of course, there is a suitcase that's on her bed. But as she goes to pick it up and leave, she happens to glance over at Kirsten's desk, and there is sitting on her desk the house that Nancy used to live in, 1428 Elm Street. And it's like, okay, no problems, we'll get to the bottom of this. So the next scene we see Dr. Gordon, and he's sitting in his house, and he's looking up the what is Hypnosil. And of course, they didn't have Google back then, so I would have been, I mean, he had a computer, an old archaic computer, but I think it was more along the lines of because he's a doctor, he can look up medical records and things like that, journals that are on, you know, maybe his database or whatever, but there was certainly no internet. He couldn't do a Google search to find out what Hypnosil is. But when he's looking up Hypnosil, he basically finds that it's a drug used to treat night terrors. So it's a dream suppressant. So it's like, okay, that's pretty... And of course, we all know why Nancy would be having those sort of medications to try and suppress that, because of what she went through with Freddie. So we return to Kristen, who's drawing on her bed in the psychiatric hospital right now, and she's basically just drawing away, but she's drawing the house that she was making a model of. She was drawing Elm Street. She begins to doze off, and then, as I said, I love the transition from I'm asleep, now I'm in the dream. It's that quick. And of course, you see her pen start, stop writing, and she falls asleep, and then she wakes up because the door opens up, and then of course the little red tricycle comes into the room and starts melting on the floor. So of course Kirsten's basically, I'm getting out of this area, I'm getting out, I'm going into the hallway. But she enters out through the hallway, and of course the door slams shut, and of course we see it's the front door of Elm Street, and now we are in the Elm Street house. So, you know, there is Kirsten trying to in vain to get out of the house. She makes her way around from, you know, the front door into the living room, dining room, and there's a pig that's a cooked pig that's basically laying on the dining room table with a glass of, with a glass there with a bottle of wine basically sitting there. It's almost like it's a king's seat, and we know who's going to be sitting on that seat. And of course, what the little jump scare that happens is rather, you know, there's no music and we're looking at the pig, and then suddenly it grunts at you and it's like, oh shit. And it does. Even now I watch that movie and I go, holy shit, that still gets me after all these years. So of course Kristen explores and she goes into the living room, and of course there's no furniture whatsoever. It's just a vacant room, and you can see there's a carpet on the floor, but suddenly the carpet starts to lift up. It's almost like something's underneath the carpet, and it's like moves itself around, and you know, Kirsten's trying to get in the center of this, and of course it gushes through the walls and there's explosions going on, and then everything basically stops, and then all of a sudden we see that there is a snake in, and of course it has Freddy's face, grabs a, basically comes out from behind, or sorry, from underneath Kirsten, grabs a hold of her through her legs, and she slams down onto the ground, and there is this snake of Freddy trying to eat Kirsten. We don't know what she was what was going to be the end result of this, but he is in the middle of trying to eat her. It's at this stage that she screams for Nancy to help her. It's of course at this stage that the scene transitions to Nancy's apartment, and she hears the scream that was going on from Kirsten, and of course she acknowledges that there's something going on. She looks over at the model that she's got in her house, of her house that she used to live in, and she's looking directly at what would be the living room, and she's looking directly at what's going on, and she hears the scream again. It's at this stage that Nancy basically closes her eyes and puts her hand on her head and falls backwards, but we find that, oh my god, Nancy is asleep, and she is sucked into her living room chair and suddenly is now in Kirsten's dream and watching her battle Freddy as a little bit of a bonus that's going on, and Kirsten is absolutely screaming for Nancy's help.
Thank you.
So, of course, as you hear, you know, Nancy suddenly says to Kirsten, get us out of here. Kirsten immediately starts thinking about getting out of the dream. And Nancy then suddenly wakes up in her own apartment and happens to look at her hand. And we see that she's got a cut on her hand from the mirror because she's jammed a shard of glass into Freddy's eyes. And that's when you heard him say, you. So he's now aware that Nancy is now on the team. And now he's got his old foe to deal with. This is, you know, because Nancy's the only one that's been actually able to conquer Freddy and be basically stand up for herself in a dream. So this is the loose end that Freddy definitely wants to tie up. So the next morning, Nancy brings the model to Kirsten and tells her that this is where she used to live. And she's like, and Kirsten's like, well, this is just the place that I keep dreaming about. And says to her, the man in my dream, he's real, isn't he? And Nancy basically says, yes, he's real. Of course, you know, we now see that she's going into group. But before they go into group, she says, you know, have you ever done that? Have you ever pulled someone into your dream? And she says, well, I haven't done that since I was a little girl. And she says, well, you did it last night, and it's an amazing gift, you know. And she says, well, when I was a little girl, if I had a bad dream, I'd pull my dad in, and suddenly it would be, a wonderful dream. And then we'd wake up in the morning, and he'd always, talk to me as if it was like his dream. And, of course, Nancy's like, well, it is an absolutely amazing gift. So, you know, we need to really work on that one, you know. So now we transition to the very first official group session that we're going to be in. So Dr. Gordon tells the kids that this is straight talk only in this room. So I think that's a great way of doing it, that we're coming in, no lies, no secrets. This is straight talk. Everyone is honest in this room. And he and Dr. Sims then introduces Nancy to the rest of the patients. And, of course, you know, he says, you know, with the fact that you already know Kirsten and you've met a couple of other people, but, you know, go around the room and tell us. And, of course, this young guy by the name of Will Stanton, he's the first to introduce himself, and he tells Nancy that he had an accident and he ended up in this wheelchair. Of course, Taryn, one of the young girls, reveals that it was not an accident in my ass. It was basically through a suicide attempt that he jumped, and, of course, that's how he became a paraplegic, or in the wheelchair, I should say. Kincaid jumps to Will's defense and reveals that Taryn was a junkie injecting herself into her arms. And of course, you know, and as Kincaid says, at least he wasn't hanging around with a bunch of low lives, you know, injecting himself. And of course, then Jennifer pipes up and she says that she wants to be an actress on TV. And she's the young girl that happens to be burning herself with cigarettes. We figure out that she doesn't want to go to sleep. So that's the only way that she's going to be able to stay awake. She then goes and introduces Nancy to Joey. Now, he used to be a very, very popular debater in high school, but, of course, now he doesn't speak. So Taryn basically introduces herself, but she comes in and she admits that she's going through some very, very strange shit in her dreams, and that the hospital is a better alternative than juvenile hall. Philip, who we've already met, the one that actually does the clay models, basically interrupts and says that all the doctors believe that their dreams are group psychosis. And he says, so we go around, we make minimal effort, and, you know, we make maximum effort for minimum results. And he says, you know, the fact that everyone dreams and, you know, everyone has the same dream, but that doesn't seem to impress anybody. And so they're like, okay, well, you know, let's basically work on that. And, you know, as he said, he goes around the circle, and it's just going round and round circles. Nobody's actually helping this situation. Dr. Sims tells him that he'll make no progress whatsoever until the teens can accept their dreams as byproducts of guilt, psychological scars stemming from moral conflicts and over-sexuality. Of course, this is when, and I love when Kincaid says, oh, great, now my dick's killing me. And basically everyone in the room, has an absolute giggle fest, which I think is pretty, it's a pretty standard comment as far as, you know, overt sexuality. It's like, okay, we all need to get laid. Fantastic. So now we see that we're transitioning to a game. Now everyone is playing, Taryn, Will and Joey are playing Dungeons and Dragons. And I've never played it myself, but I hear that it's very popular. And it was a very popular game back when I was younger. But of course, Max, good old Lawrence Fishburne, comes in and tells everyone that it's lights out. So after Max and Taryn leave, it's revealed that the boys take shifts to sleep. So there's a bit of a small little argument that starts on between Will and Joey. Now, Will, you know, he's the poor young guy that's actually in the wheelchair. And he sits up and he says to Joey, you know, okay, you get first shift. And Joey's like shaking his head as if to say, no, I'm not taking first shift. But he's like, oh, come on, I had it last night. And he's like, and he basically has that resounding, oh, Okay, all right. You had it last night, first shift. I'll sit up. So he says, good. Okay, remember, wake me if you see that there's any problems whatsoever. And he basically has that reassuring nod about, yep, okay, I'll look after you while you're asleep. And so that stage, the will starts to relax and goes to sleep. So now we see that, you know, the work colleague situation is starting up, and Nancy and Neil Gordon are getting coffee, and he asks Nancy about Nancy's parents, and she says that her mum, you know, in inverted brackets, died in her sleep. We all know what happened. And her and her father don't have a good relationship. They really don't speak anymore. And she tells Neil that the teens are in real physical danger from their dreams. And he asks her about Hypnosil. You know, is that why, you know, what do you think about Hypnosil? And she's like, well, you know, I used to be like them, Neil. I used to go through this. And she said, listen, you know, we should really do something. This could really help the children. Of maybe we could prescribe the drug to the kids. She basically says that, you know, I used to be like them, and if I had this dream suppressant, it might have actually helped me out. Of course, you know, Neil is absolutely, you know, gobsmacked about this, and says that, you know, because it's, you know, their survival, but he's like, no, I'm not gonna go down that path whatsoever. So now, while we're you know, back into the psychiatric hospital, we're seeing one of Philip's puppets and comes to life, and of course it re-sculptures itself into the face of Freddy Krueger, making its way to Philip's bed. It basically turns into Freddy, and then Freddy basically materializes at the foot of his bed. And of course there's this moment that Philip wakes up, and he, you know, Freddy's got that shh, don't say anything, you know, and starts to and rips his you know, bed sheet off of him and cuts him on his, you know, both arms and both legs, as in, you know, where your tendons are and stuff like that, and basically pulls, you know, him out of the bed. Now, remember, Kincaid and you know, Philip are roommates, so as soon as he starts seeing Philip walking, he's like, oh, okay, he's sleepwalking again, no problems, I'll just let you go. And of course, he does say, you know, have a nice stroll, asshole. And but we can see Philip can see, which is his veins and, you know, his you know, body parts are actually being manipulated by Freddy in some, basically like a marionette sort of situation. And Freddy leads him up to the top of the bell tower. It's at this stage that Joey sees Philip standing on the edge and wakes Will up and drags him to a chair, and then runs out to basically get help and grabs, you know, a meal tray from one of the nurses and bangs on all the doors to try and get everyone to wake up. Of course, they run to their room, and of course, we're all watching poor old Philip, you know, out of the ledge of this bell tower, and everyone is screaming at him, just, Philip, don't do it, do not do it. Of course, at this stage, we can see that Freddy's face is in the stars above him, and you can see that he cuts the tendons that he's holding as little, you know, puppet marionette sort of situation, and you see Philip jump to his death. So there is the very first death, but you know, they're assuming that he has, well, the doctors are assuming that he's committed suicide, but a lot of other people, as in all his friends and the patients, believe otherwise. So in group the next morning, the kids are all upset, obviously, as you would be, because you've seen your friend, you know, die. And Kincaid is very annoyed, and he basically says that he blames Philip's death on his weakness, and says, you know, that he wasn't strong enough, so he got nailed. And of course, you know, Dr. Gordon tries to tell them that it was suicide, which the others don't believe. And Philip is the very first one that sits there and goes, no, I was watching his eyes all the way down. He was wide awake. And of course, the doctors say, well, okay, well, then it was definitely suicide. And they're like, no. And Taryn is the first person that pops up and says, no, it was murder. That bastard murdered him. And so Dr. Sims basically tells the teens that to prevent a reoccurrence, all the rooms will be locked at night, and they will be sedated. And of course, this is when Nancy basically says, no, you can't do that. They're going to be defenseless against their dreams. And Kincaid basically says, you know, the fuck you will. You're not going to sedate me. Of course, poor old Dr. Sims beeps for security, and he's sent to isolation for the night. And he's going to be sedated. He basically is dragged away, and, you know, Nancy again protests and says, you cannot do this. If you sedate these children, they are going to be completely defenseless. And you know, Dr. Sims is completely clueless, and she's like, yes, but this is what they need, a night of uninterrupted REM sleep. And this is when Neil decides, okay, I need to do something right here. So he says to Dr. Sims, listen, I need to to prevent this from happening. I need to keep these children safe. I want to basically prescribe Hypnosil. And of course, Sims basically says, I can't allow that. And he says, well, if you don't, allow this, then I'm basically going to go, over your head to, the CEO of the hospital if you don't do it. And she's like, okay, if you want to do that, that's fine, but it is completely on you, whatever happens. You take full responsibility. And Nancy says to Dr. Gordon, do you think we can get the Hypnosil by tonight? He's like, I don't know, but I'm going to certainly try. So poor old Kincaid, he is locked in the quiet room, and he is struggling to stay asleep. To stay awake. He doesn't want to sleep. He's like, no. And he's singing a song to try and keep himself awake. But, can you imagine, you are so tired, and the room that you're in is completely and utterly dead silent, and all you want, and the walls are nicely padded, and all you want to really do is sleep, but you cannot because of this maniac that's in your dreams that's going to tear you a new one. So, this is what they're really struggling for right now. Jennifer is now, this is the young girl that burns herself. She's up watching TV, and Max comes in and goes, okay, well, you've got to go back to your room. And she's like, no, I can't go to sleep, Max, not tonight. I don't want to relive what actually happened with Philip. And he's like, well, come on, you watch too much TV as it is. And she's like, no, I'm doing it for research. And he's like, oh, that's right, you're going to be a big TV star. And he says, well, listen, I didn't see you. I don't want anything to do with the situation. If you get caught, it's on you. It's not on me. And she's like, okay, thanks. So we then suddenly see that Taryn is coming out from showering, and she's basically accosted by an orderly who offers her the keys to the dispensary. And she's like, no, I don't do that. And it's really interesting. It's those creepy people, and there are creepy people everywhere. And I'm sure in medical situations that, the people that work night shift, and I've worked night shift in hospitals, I've not been creepy, thank you very much. But, there are those people that would take advantage of this situation if they're working on a psychiatric ward and they've got the keys and, to medication and stuff like that. Who knows? This could possibly happen. But he basically says to her, listen, I've got the keys to dispensary and we can get, a nice pharmaceutical high. And she's like, nope. Don't do that anymore. And if you don't, get out of my face, I'm going to go straight to Max. And of course, this guy's like, yeah, but who's going to believe a junkie like you? And she's basically saying to him, fuck off, and leaves, in a very, very quick amount of time. So we go back to the TV room, and Jennifer is in the middle of watching a TV show. And of course, the TV starts to make some sort of funny, strange sounds and starts to, she's really concentrating on trying to stay awake, and she finds a cigarette that's underneath, the chair that she's sitting on. She luckily lights it and burns her, arm to try and stay awake. But this is just not working because Jennifer suddenly falls asleep. Now, as I said, the transition from I'm asleep, I'm awake. That's how quickly it is. And she suddenly wakes up and she sees an interview on the Dick Cavett show with Zsa Zsa Gabor as the guest. So after a few minutes, Cavett, and I love this fun fact about this, Dick Cavett did not like Zsa Zsa Gabor at all. And they asked him, if you ever wanted to see someone get killed, who would it be? And he said, Zsa Zsa Gabor. So in this movie, they managed to get Dick Cavett on his show and basically got Zsa Zsa Gabor as the guest. So, Dick Cavett is talking and he's asking, Zsa Zsa Gabor about how she got into acting. And she's like, oh, I got into acting very young. And Dick Cavett says to her, well, do you think that, actresses and actors should study or just go straight into the business? And Zsa Zsa Gabor is like, no, I think they should definitely study. And, of course, this is when he goes, can I ask you another question? She says, yes. And he goes, whoever fuck gives what you say? And suddenly, Freddie is standing right above Zsa Zsa Gabor and goes to attack her after the signal cuts out completely. So, Jennifer goes over and hits the side of the TV. And, of course, these metal arms come out from right of the side of the TV and grab a hold of her and lift her up to the screen. And it's the top of the TV. There is a face that suddenly morphs, and it's Freddy's face, head there, with the antenna as ears. This is why it suddenly becomes rather comical as we go along through these nightmare movies, that, Freddy starts to really get into some play sort of situation. And he says to Daisy says to Jennifer, "This is your big break in TV. Fuck the prime time, bitch!" And slams her head directly into the screen. So this this moment, you know, Max bursts into the room and see that Jennifer is hanging from the TV with her head straight into the TV, and she's dead. Now, my question to you is: this TV is about, I don't know, 5 foot up from the ground. So how do you think that she would have been, had enough momentum to jump from that distance from where the table is to where the TV is on the wall and literally jump and put her head through the TV screen? I don't know. But he comes into the room and is like, oh my God, so am I in deep shit? Because remember, he was supposed to get them back into their room to have the doors shut and locked, and they were supposed to be sedated. So how are you going to explain this one? So unfortunately, it's after this, we really don't see Max anymore, so I think maybe he might have been dismissed. But we kind of figure that might have been the case, because he was told to put them all in their rooms and have them sedated. So yeah, I don't think you're really going to get away with this situation. But actually, we do see him one last time. So he wasn't obviously dismissed or or told off, but you know, I think he probably would have been in the normal world. So we are now at Jennifer's funeral, and Neil watches her funeral from a distance. The nun he saw earlier, now remember I said there was a nun that he saw, and then suddenly she disappeared. Well, she basically approaches him and asks him about his faith, and he tells her before that he asks if you know, maybe it's just my faith is science. And he asks her, you know, who is she? And we basically find out that she's Sister Mary Helena. And she does volunteer work at the hospital from time to time when she's needed. And tells him that the only way to save the children is to put the unquiet spirit to rest. And of course, it's at this moment that Nancy approaches him. And he turns around to see, basically to introduce her to the nun. And of course, the nun has disappeared. So Nancy and Neil basically are now, you know, sharing a meal at Nancy's house. And basically, Nancy tells him about the Malaysian dream doll, which is supposed to bring good dreams. And of course, you know, Neil is basically, yep, okay, I'm happy to hear about that, but I'm really so worried about the kids. And so she basically says, I wonder if it's better if you hear the truth. And he's like, hear the truth about what? So we are now into the next group session, and Neil allows Nancy to tell the kids about Freddy. Although skeptical at first when she describes his dirty brown hat, his burnt face, and the razors on his right hand, they suddenly believe her. She tells him that the man, Freddy Krueger, was a child murderer before he died. After he died, he became something much worse. She also shares the fact that 6 years ago, he had killed her friends and almost killed her as revenge for his death. And of course, the kids are like, well, okay, so why is he after us? And Nancy's like, he's not after you. He's basically, you're paying for your parents' sins. You are the last of the Elm Street children, and your mother and fathers in this group burnt him alive in his boiler room. So basically, you know, their sins are now your problem. And of course, I love it when, you know, Will says to the group, oh, that's crazy. My mother and father never said anything about this. And of course, Taryn's like, oh, right. So your parents are going to say, you know, sweet dreams, you know, say your prayers. And oh, by the way, we torched some maniac last night. So, you know, it really is that situation of like, well, okay, we've got to believe this because you've just described this guy detail for detail of what we're going through. Of course, Nancy also reveals that because there was a mistake on the search warrant that was going to lead to his arrest, it didn't happen because someone signed the bit of paper in the wrong spot, and of course the charges were dropped and Krueger was free. This is why the parents of Springwood hunted Freddy down and burned him alive, and this is the reason that now you're paying for their sins because they did this to him. So of course the group basically says, so what do we do about this? And Nancy says, well, Kirsten's the key. You know, Kristen's the key. She is the one that can actually lead us into the dream world. And Kristen's like, I haven't done that for ages. And Nancy's like, well, you did it last night, so maybe you can try and bring people, as in the entire group, into your dream. So they just decide to do a bit of group hypnosis. So, you know, Dr. Gordon turns on a pendulum with a little light and basically starts to do the big group hypnosis. And he gets them to relax and follow the pendulum as Nancy tells Kristen to take them to the dream world. At first, little things don't seem to be happening. They're all just sitting there. And of course, they wake up because obviously it doesn't work. And Kirsten's like, oh, I'm sorry about that. And they're like, okay, let's take five. Let's try again. However, Joey wanders out of the room and spots the young nurse he had helped previously. This is a very, very attractive nurse. And she tells him that she wanted to talk to him alone and that she really likes him. She claims that to make up excuses every day to come into the wards to see him because he's just so cute. So Dr. Gordon is just sitting, you know, standing on the corner of the room saying, I was, you know, willing to go through this, you know, talking to Nancy, saying I was willing to go through this with you for the good of the children, but I don't think this is going to work. And as he sets off a perpetual motion device, the ball bearings break away and float around the room, revealing that they are actually in the dream world, despite the initial appearances there. And he's like, well, no, we're not in the dream world. We're actually in group. And of course, this is where Neil struggles to believe it until Will stands up and turns the ball bearings into a butterfly. Kristen is able to do a backflip and somersault in her dreams. Kincaid is super, super strong. And Taryn is beautiful, and she's got this huge fucking mohawk, but she goes, I'm also bad, and has and activates two switchblades, and really looks really awesome, you know, punk girl. Joey is in a room with the nurse, and oh my god, this is the best boobs you'll ever see. God damn it. She asks him to unzip her uniform, revealing she is topless underneath. She is hell topless underneath. Asking if he likes her body, because Joey sits there and goes, yep, absolutely. He doesn't say anything, but yeah, he is nodding enthusiastically. She pushes him under the bed and starts to kiss him before biting his tongue and pulling it from his mouth. The tongues are then used as bindings to secure Joey's wrists and ankles to the bed, and the nurse revealed to be Freddy Krueger. And of course, this is the little quip that he says. He basically says to Joey, are you feeling tongue-tied? The mattress disappears to reveal a pit right beneath him with all this fire that's going on. At that moment, the others realize that Freddy is close and that he has Joey. The room morphs into a boiler room despite Kincaid's attempts to stop it. It's almost like, you know, as if you remember, it's like Star Wars, where you've got the walls closing in like a compactor. Well, this is what's happening in this room. And Kincaid is standing there trying to push it almost to stop it. So basically, he's doing a Chewbacca. The screams alert Dr. Sims, who's not happy, and Joey's on the floor, seeming in a coma. And basically, he's in a code blue coma. This is blamed on the hypnoseal Dr. Gordon has prescribed, and both he and Nancy are suspended. And yeah, it's like, really, this is an overreaction. As he clears out his stuff, Neil looks at a photograph and is then distracted by Sister Mary Helena in the tower. The door is locked, but Neil breaks it and basically climbs the tower to basically see her. The nun is at the top of the tower. She reveals in the room was once used to house the most dangerous, criminally insane patients at the hospital. The wing was closed in the 40s after a young girl was locked in the wing over the holidays. The inmates kept her hidden for days, raping her hundreds of times. And of course, the nun then reveals that she was with child. She then reveals the name of the nun that was in there by the name of Amanda Krueger. And this is basically when Neil suddenly goes, oh, Freddy. And basically, the nun then says that the only way to stop Freddy is to find his remains and bury them in hollowed ground. So Nancy visits with Joey, and she demands that Freddy releases him, but the words, come and get him, bitch, appears carved on his chest. And Nancy's like, oh my god, okay. So Nancy wants to go into the dream world and fight Freddy, but Neil tells her that he has one other option that he can try. She agrees to try and tells him that only one man knows whereabouts Freddy's remains would be. And of course, we find that there's only one man that would actually know where it would be. And guess what? It happens to be Nancy's father, who, unfortunately, he used to be a police officer. He's now gone completely off the rails, and he is now just a regular security guard because whether he's just lost his job over the death of his wife or what was going on with Nancy at that time, but he's just basically lost it. And no, I can't do this anymore. I can't be a police officer. So now he's just a regular old security guard. So Nancy, you know, approaches him in a bar that he frequents and, you know, says, listen, you know, I've got a problem, you know, Kruger's back. And this is when her father says, ah, Nancy, Fred Krueger is dead. You really have to start getting this through your head. And she's like, no, you know what he did last time, but I think we can defeat him this time. And he has really no interest in whatsoever of this situation. And it's at this moment that Neil basically interjects and says, listen, she's telling you the truth. This is really happening. And of course, you know, Officer Thompson's like, I really don't know who you are, and I don't know what you want, but just get the fuck away from me. So Nancy is just, you know, at her wit's end. She can't talk to her father and starts to walk out of the bar. And this is when Neil basically says, listen, you know, I'll try and get the remains. You know, I'll try and get him to talk. You just go and do what you've got to do to clear your head. So, of course, we've seen back in the hospital that everyone is absolutely losing their minds over the fact that Dr. Gordon and Nancy are now being suspended, and Dr. Sims has now sedated, or is going to sedate Kristen and putting her into the quiet room. So Taryn and a couple of the others immediately think, oh, we've got to speak to Dr. Gordon. So, of course, Dr. Gordon, even though he's been suspended, he's still got his pager. And, of course, a pager used to be a little item where you would ring a certain number, they would page you, you would then get the number on the screen, you'd ring the number back, and that's where you'd know who was calling you. So, of course, you know, she does, Dr. Gordon does ring, you know, the kids back, and Taryn says, listen, they doped, you know, Kristen up, she's in the quiet room, and she's going to be defenseless against her dreams with Freddy. So it's at this moment that Nancy says, look, I've got to go to the kids, and of course, you know, Neil says, okay, you go to get to the children, you go to the hospital, I'll deal with your father. And of course, it's like, okay, but you know what he's going to be like. And he's like, no, I'll do it. So Nancy goes off to try and rescue poor old Kristen. So, of course, luckily, Neil convinces Officer Thompson to go with him. And Neil drives them to a church where he takes the keys out of Donald's car. And Donald's like, hey, and he's like, I'll be back in a second. And he goes into the church and gets some holy water and a crucifix. And, of course, it's at this stage that Neil and Nancy's dad pull up at Penny's auto salvage yard. And basically, this is where they've hidden Freddy's remains. Very, very deep in the auto yard. And Neil was directed right into the heart of the establishment. Of course, Nancy arrives, and this is when Max is like blocking her entrance into the hospital, and he's like, you're not coming in to see the kids. And she's like, listen, I've been suspended, I'm going to probably be fired, so I just want to say goodbye to the kids. And they're like, oh, he's like, okay, they're in the TV room, that's fine. So Nancy finds the kids and basically says, come on, we're going to do our last official group. And says to everyone, this is, you know, Kincaid, Will and Taryn, and that Joey and Kirsten needs them. And basically says, nobody can go in if they don't want to. You don't have to go in with me. But basically says, and Nancy warns them, that if they die in the dream, they die for real. And so, and she also does say, remember, we all have to stick together. Don't separate whatsoever. So they start the dream sequence. They start to watch the metronome going backwards and forwards, and they find themselves in the padded cell with Kirsten. And Kirsten basically says, listen, you know, Joey needs us. We need to go in there. We need to all stay together. And then all of a sudden, you've got, you know, the walls of the padded cell start to rip apart. And you can see that Freddy's gloves coming through the walls and, you know, ripping every wall that you can think of. And there's just bits and pieces going everywhere, and suddenly we find that Kristen is back in her bedroom, and she's working on the model in, you know, the model house. And her mother, you know, basically walks in and says, oh, for God's sakes, Kristen, you know, turn the radio down, you're gonna wake the whole neighborhood. And she's like, okay. And of course the mother's like, what are you still doing up? And she said, I just want to make sure that you're okay. And she says, well, I'm okay now, get into bed. So she's sitting in the bed, and she says, you know, Mum, I had an awful dream.
I had the most awful dream.
Lane, where do you keep the bourbon?
I'll be right down. Chris, I've got a guest. Please, Mom, I just don't want to be alone.
I said, where's the fucking bourbon? You should listen to your mother.
God damn it, Kristen, you ruin everything. Every time I bring a man home, you spoil it. You know what your shrink says? You're just trying to get a little attention.
So unfortunately, Kristen's mother is decapitated, and really bad CGI. But then again, CGI was in its infancy back then. But you've got you can see that it's the head of the actress, but the very, very bad CGI. And Freddy is holding her decapitated head, and of course the head's talking to Kristen. And then of course Freddy just throws the head away to knock against the wall and starts to try and attack Kristen, who jumps out of her bedroom window. And we find her now back in the nightmare house again. So now she's back in Nancy's old house trying to fight Freddy off. So, of course, at this stage, we also see that as everything's materializing and breaking apart. Taryn is trying to find Kirsten, but instead finds herself in an alley. And there's a wall that suddenly appears behind her, saying Taryn and Freddy in a spray-painted love heart. Taryn is shocked by Freddy, who says, "Welcome home, look familiar." So I'm guessing that's part of where she used to shoot up with her junkie friends. And, of course, Taryn is, you know, dressed, you know, as this cool, you know, punk chick, and she's like, "Okay, let's dance." She pulls the knives out, and she actually manages to get, you know, one of the knives, you know, into the side of Freddy. And of course, Freddy's like, "Okay, you know, why should we fight? We should be friends, you and I." And this is when Freddy suddenly stands in front of her, and both of his hands are now covered in syringes. And Freddy is basically saying to Taryn, "Let's get high." It's at that stage that, you know, Freddy lunges towards Taryn and places, you know, the needles into each of the track marks, thereby killing Taryn. So now we've got one definitely confirmed dead, unfortunately. And, of course, the answer that Freddy goes is, "Oh, what a rush." Will finds himself in a long passageway, and he calls out for the others, hearing Freddy's laugh. Now, remember, he was the one in the wheelchair. And suddenly there's a wheelchair that is just got, you know, razors, you know, on it. It's got knives on it, and it's everything. And basically, Freddy invites Will to sit down.
Hello? You guys? Where are you? Somebody there?
Just the way I am.
For now, maybe. But when you wake up, it's back in the saddle again.
Of course, Will, who plays Dungeons and Dragons, has basically classed himself as the Wizard Master. So he is, you know, destroys the wheelchair, and he's got, you know, magical powers, and he says, you know, with all the powers that I've got, with Lowric, Prince of Elves, demon be gone, and he fires magic powers at Freddy, and he runs towards Freddy, which I would not have done. I would have been standing away from him, but of course, unfortunately, Freddy grabs a hold of him and lifts him up and says, you know, basically, "Sorry, I don't believe in fairy tales," and plunges his blades into Will's chest, killing him too. So I was like, okay. So basically, Kristen is continuously trying to search for the others, finally finding Nancy, and then the walls of the room begin to break, and Kincaid basically comes through the wall. All of a sudden, a door to the boiler room appears in front of them, and Nancy leads them down the spiral staircase, searching for Freddy. And meanwhile, Neil and Donald finally reach the center of the salvage yard, and Donald directs that Neil to a red caddy. Funny enough, that is Glenn's car that they reused. So that is where the bones of Freddy is buried. Of course, it's at this stage that Donald basically says, "Yep, I've showed you where the bones are, so I'm out of here." Of course, Neil basically has the keys and tells him that he's about to go to a funeral, a one that is long overdue, and throws in the spade to basically start digging. Nancy and the others finally reach the bottom of the boiler room, and we see that Joey is still attached to the ground, and we've got the fire underneath him. And it's at that moment that everyone decides we're going to start attacking Freddy to get him to release Joey. Unfortunately, Nancy doesn't realize just how powerful Freddy has become, and he does happen to rip open his shirt to show there's a whole lot of children's faces, and says that it's the power of the children that are basically giving me this unbelievable power in the dream world. It's at this stage that he realizes that something's going on with his bones, and he just disappears. And now, in the real world, in the salvage yard, he basically comes up out of the bag and starts to attack both Neil and Donald. Once again, very bad CGI, unfortunately, but Freddy grabs a hold of Donald and throws him, you know, to the side, and he is impaled with the fin of the Cadillac that they've taken the bones out from. It's at this stage that Freddy then starts to attack Neil and knocks him out and throws him into the hole that they dug for him, and throws some dirt on him, and then suddenly Freddy's bones just collapse to the ground, and now Freddy is back into the dream world to basically deal with what's going on between Nancy and himself and the others. So, of course, when he comes in, he goes, basically says to everyone, oh, if there was only more of me to go around, and all his images start to appear in this hall of mirrors, and all the mirrors start grabbing a hold of everyone until we find out that Joey's secret weapon in the dream world is his voice, and he screams no, and all the mirrors break, and everyone that had been sucked into the mirrors suddenly materialize back out of the mirrors, and it's like, oh, awesome. And of course, this is when Nancy's like, oh, it's over, it's done, we've finished. Of course, then all of a sudden, Nancy's father appears telling her that he'd crossed over, but he couldn't go without telling her that he was sorry for all the things that he'd done and that he loves her. Of course, Nancy goes to embrace her father and then gasps as her father turns into Freddy and plunges his claws into her stomach. This was one of the oh my god, I cannot believe he actually got her moments. Like, she was the badass bitch for the entire movie and through number one, and it was like that was the loose end that Freddy just needed to tie up. And it's like, oh, god damn it. So we think to ourselves, this cannot happen. You know, she can't just die right at that moment. Well, it's at that moment that, you know, the others start to attack Freddy. He knocks one out, knocks the other one to the side. And, of course, it's at that moment that Nancy sort of, like, regains a little bit of strength and grabs a hold of Freddy's glove and plunges it into his chest. The scene then cuts back to the audio yard, where Neil climbs out of the grave and kicks in the bones of Kruger and splashes them with holy water. As he does, rays of holy spiritual light appear on Freddy's torso. Nancy is once more tossed aside, landing by Kristen. Neil continues to splash holy water, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I lay the spirit to rest. He places the crucifix on his head, causing Freddy to spin and explode in a golden ball of light. Basically, it shows that Freddy has now been vanquished and has now been sent back to hell. Unfortunately, we now see that Nancy has passed away. And so this is when we really get to see the whole scope of everything coming in full circle, because Nancy had been this amazing foe against Freddy, and now she's gone. And it's like, oh, okay. So we really don't know what's going to be happening right now. But we now go to a funeral, and it is actually Nancy's funeral. But, you know, Neil's standing there and he sees Sister Mary Helena walking through the graveyard, so he follows her, but before he can speak, she disappears. He looks down at the grave where he's standing and to see the name Amanda Kruger, and also bears the name Sister Mary Helena, revealing that the nun of the ghost happens to be Freddy Krueger's mother. Yep, that was the last big reveal. Neil sleeps as a shot reveals that he is now in possession of the Malaysian dream doll that Nancy was talking about and Kristen's model of 1428 Elm Street. As he sleeps, the bedroom light in the model comes on, hinting Freddy may be back after all. The movie fades to black, and that is the end of A Nightmare on Elm Street number 3, Dream Warriors. Oh my god, that was such a long-ass podcast, I swear to god, but it has got so much in this movie, it's not funny. So on a scale of 0 to 5 buckets of blood, 0 being how do I get the last 1 hour and whatever it is, minutes of my life back, to 5 it was a perfect movie and I'd watch it all over again, I will give this a 5. Simply because it is absolutely perfect. I think the story, the acting, everything was just absolutely perfect about this movie. And if I was watching it and I'd finished and you walked in and you said, what were you watching? I would watch it all over again if you said, hey, I want to watch it. And I'd be very happy to sit down and watch it again. It is very, very fun to watch. And I even love the next one, which is Dream Master. A lot of people have problems with Dream Master, but I really do enjoy that one. So look, I'm very happy to have done this movie, and you know, 5 out of 5 for me. Before I get finished of this very, very long podcast, we have to do Paul's Fun Facts. So there are 66 items in the fun facts, and I'm not going to have you sit here for another 2 hours. I'm only going to do maybe 2 or 3 because this has been such a long episode. I don't want to waste any more of your time and get you bored. But the Freddy glove, that was actually stolen from the set of this film, but it was found in another movie. It was hanging on the wall in the work shed in Evil Dead Part 2, 1987. released in the same year that this one was done. It was part of a continued banter between directors Wes Craven and Sam Raimi. So basically what they would do is they would actually put little bits of, you know, each movie into their movie. So, you know, this glove was stolen, but suddenly, hey, it appears in Evil Dead Part 2. So thank God we actually got it back, because thank God that is the original glove that Robert Englund always uses, and is a part of cinema history. And just one final one to finish up the podcast for the day. So, for the dream sequence in which Dick Cavett interview is interrupted by Freddy Krueger, Sally Kellerman was originally in the script as a guest, but Cavett was then allowed to pick the person he'd be interviewing. He picked Zsa Zsa Gabor because he thought she was the dumbest person he'd ever met in his life, and he'd never have her on his show in real life. So, if there was one person he'd want to see killed by Freddy, it would definitely be Zsa Zsa Gabor. That's a really nasty thing to say. But hey, if the shoe fits, wear it. Anyway, thank you very much once again for coming to visit me, the Horror Crypt Podcast. Next week, I have got a movie that... Okay, we watch a lot of horror movies. And, you know, you can see serial killers and you can see mass murderers and stuff like that. But have you ever thought that there is a good chance that you may be the victim of a horror movie yourself? Not just in a movie, but actually in real life. Now, if your answer is maybe yes or maybe no, I'm telling you, the movie I'm doing next week is a solid yes. Yes, because it could definitely 100% happen to you. This movie was, when I watched this, it scared the shit out of me. Not because it is terrifying, because it is a ghoulish monster. It terrified me because it is real life. It could definitely happen to you without a word of a lie. So tune in next week for that movie, because that movie is by far, you know, we can watch Jason, we can watch Michael, we can watch Freddy, we can watch any other horror movie. This movie that I'm going to review next week, it will definitely make you stop and think long and hard about the possibility that you could be a victim, a real life victim. Anyway, in saying that, thank you once again for joining me, and as I say every week, I'll creep you later.